Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And we also want to let you know that we're sponsored by Simply Safe Home Security. Go to simplysafe.com/ricochet. Much more on them a little bit later in the podcast. And Jim, as we speak, this is our good martini. The Senate Judiciary Committee is debating and will ultimately vote later today. Perhaps it will have already happened by the time our listeners hear this on the nomination of Neil Gorsuch to be the next justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. We're expecting a largely, if not entirely, party line vote out of the Judiciary Committee. We're also seeing more and more Democrats come out saying they're going to filibuster, including a couple of red state Democrats like John Tester and Claire McCaskill. So we're getting closer and closer to Mitch McConnell and the Republicans having to make a decision here on what to do and whether to go nuclear. The good news today is that even at the USA Today, Neil Gorsuch is getting pretty good reviews saying, yes, we understand Democrats. You're upset about what happened to Merrick Garland. We don't think that was the right thing either. You and I would probably disagree with that, perhaps. But ultimately, when it comes to the qualification of Neil Gorsuch, they say this. Gorsuch's credentials are impeccable. Columbia, Harvard, Oxford, federal and Supreme Court clerkships, and a decade on the federal appeals bench. He received a well-qualified rating, the highest available from the American Bar Association. On principles and independence, he has gotten an array of glowing references, including from some Democrats and liberals. Extensive vetting has unearthed no hint of personal scandal. Towards the end, it says, as the Gorsuch nomination heads for a vote Monday in the Senate Judiciary Committee, objecting to Republican obstructionism is fair game. So is disagreeing with the nominee's legal philosophy, but insisting he is unfit for the bench is not. Overall, Gorsuch is about the best choice the country can expect from this president. In fact, the nomination was one of the least objectionable things Trump has done since taking office. So clearly, USA Today editorial board playing it right down the middle, Jim. No liberal bias there whatsoever in evaluating this. But in the end, they can at least see the fact that Neil Gorsuch is perfectly qualified for this job. And while the Democrats seem intent on throwing a hissy fit here, this is not the right time to do it. And it'll make whatever Republicans have to do seem far more reasonable.
You know, I suppose the Democrats could now try to say that the USA Today editorial board is a bunch of crazed right wingers, always marching in lockstep with the Trump administration's prerogatives. But, you know, even for them, that'd be a fairly ludicrous stretch. Look, I think those last couple of paragraphs put it very well. Many people who are not fans of Trump would say that the nomination of Gorsuch is the single best decision he's made so far in his presidency, and that it's not. I mean, I guess the thinking is if Senate Democrats think, oh, if we somehow block this one, which they're not going to be able to do, we can generate enough pressure that he'll be afraid and he'll nominate somebody who's not on his list of 21 other justices. Ivanka will get to him and he'll appoint, you know, a Merrick Garland type. He'll pick somebody who's, you know, kind of a David Souter type that we can hope will drift leftward as the as his years on the court go by. But look, you don't have the votes, guys. And I would very much believe that if you're concerned about this president, reward him when he does something right, positive reinforcement or something like that, by trying to, you know, by pulling out every conceivable stop to block the nomination of Gorsuch. The Democrats are making clear, look, we're going to do this for any Republican nomination. We don't believe that Republican presidents have the right to nominate justices anymore. And that's, you know, a ludicrous partisan position, but that's what they've decided to do. So even the folks at USA Today can see this. A couple of Democrats, I believe we're at three, might be getting to four, depending on how John Tester is feeling today. Democrats who are saying they're going to vote for him. They know this is the sort of thing that could hurt them in 2018. My sneaking suspicion, Greg, is that you're going to see Democrats that you know, Schumer will allow up to about 57, 58. He doesn't want to get them to get to 59 because anybody changes their mind, suddenly they're in trouble. You don't want to be the last guy who upholds the filibuster, so you got to have at least two. So what you do is that way, anybody can say, look, even if I had changed my mind, the filibuster was going to go on anyway, so you can't blame me for the filibuster. So really deep down, Democrats want to have 42 votes. They're at, let's see, so you got 52 Republicans, you got three Democrats who are definite, another three that are maybes. You'll probably get to that 58 level. And the mentality of the Democrats, if only 58 senators are voting for him, well, that just doesn't meet this imaginary standard we invented a couple of days ago, and thus you have to reject him. And no, it's not the way it works. And that's, you know, I went through the thinking on this in the Morning Joel today, Greg. Look, it's conceivable that the next judicial nomination from a Supreme Court judicial nomination from President Trump isn't so good. And then you might have an actual chance of succeeding with your filibuster. But you might even get some Republicans agreeing if the choice was bad enough, if you had another Harriet Meyer scenario. Democrats don't want to think that far ahead. They just want to placate the base right now, and it's probably going to come back and bite them in the tush. But you know what? They want to go down that path. We can't stop them, Greg.
Well, it might bite them in the tush when it comes to this nomination and future nominations. Claire McCaskill, man, she's already likely to face Congresswoman Ann Wagner in Missouri, which means Ann Wagner's probably not likely to make the sort of statements that help Claire McCaskill get elected that Todd Akin made a few years ago. For her,
isn't Claire McCaskill setting up Akin 2018?
I'm sure she'd like to. But, you know, that's a state where Trump won by 20, so it's not like people are recoiling at everything he does. And she is endangered, and she, I think, at least right now, looks like she's ready to roll the dice as being very much opposed to Trump rather than being the moderate she's posed herself as for the past couple cycles. Interesting to see if it works, but it's a big gamble, and I think the target just got bigger on her. Let's move on to the bad martini now, and the details are still forthcoming, so some of these numbers could change. This is from the UK Independent. At least 9 people have been killed and 20 more injured in a bomb blast in the St. Petersburg metro system. Earlier Russian media reports reported 10 were killed and 50 injured and said there were 2 blasts. An unidentified explosive device went off at 2:20 p.m. on a train leaving the Technology Institute station and heading to the Sinaia Plaschad station, hope I'm saying that correctly, Russia's National Anti-Terrorist Committee said. Russian security agencies found and defused a second explosive device at another station. Officials may have caught the organizer of the attacks on closed-circuit TV, according to the Russian news agency Interfax. A manhunt is underway. Vladimir Putin was in town. The rest of the subway system in St. Petersburg has been shut down. Security beefed up in Moscow. Jim, this obviously just comes a few days after the terrorist attack near Parliament in London. And so it's just another reminder that these people are not stopping.
Yeah, this is bad on 3 levels. The first is obviously the intense human tragedy. At this point, it sounds like there are 10 dead and many injured, although I think it's 11 dead, according to CNN. That number is probably going to go higher as the day goes on. It is also very bad because those of us who remember Chechnya or remember previous Russian counterterrorism operations, they don't react lightly. They're not exactly delicate in their response. They're not always precise in their response. Russia's response, whether it was Chechens or whether it was other groups, tends to be particularly heavy-handed, which leads to more bloodshed and can sometimes run counter to U.S. interests. We completely understand the need for counterterrorism. It's just that the Russians tend to prefer sledgehammers to kill flies. And so the idea of this leading to some sort of escalation somewhere in the world is quite likely. It's worth noting at this point, we don't know who did this. We don't know whether this is Chechens. We don't know whether this is ISIS. I understand there was a great deal of chatter on ISIS boards. After this happens, they're probably likely to take credit for it. But whether or not it actually was ISIS themselves, it remains to be seen. And kind of the third aspect of this is that, yes, Russia sometimes fights Islamists, but they don't really fight it the way we do. If you look at their interventions in Syria, they are much more focused on bombing the Free Syrian Army and folks that are opponents of the regime in Damascus, and much less focused on bombing ISIS. A lot of Trump supporters, a lot of Trump himself have talked about Russia as a potential serious partner in counterterrorism operations, and it would be lovely to see that. We would love to have the Russians as our allies on this. Unfortunately, they tend to see the world differently and define the Islamist threat differently. Their focus is not on this, you know, ISIS for some reason has never been their priority. Now, if this is an ISIS attack, maybe it's going to be the Russian priority, and maybe we can see some sort of opportunity for cooperation there. But my guess is that's a long ways down the road. As it is now, just a terrible sight. It's interesting. I was going on the list. I don't think St. Petersburg has been a site of a major terrorist attack so far, at least not in my cursory research. So yet another major metropolitan great city of the world finds itself the victim of terrorism. Then ordinary commuters pay the price.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're certainly right about Russia being schizophrenic on Islamic terror, assuming that the earlier reports we're getting on this are accurate. This is a country that basically sold Iran most of its technology to build its nuclear program, which, of course, is only for peaceful energy purposes, Jim, not for military purposes. But so they're willing to make a quick buck off of them. But then when it actually comes back on their own soil, they're all shocked and then they go and slaughter everybody.
Technically, Greg, when it comes to helping the Iranians, maybe the U.S. government can't throw stones the way we used to. Not since the Iran deal, at least.
No, we didn't do ourselves any favors there. But one of the things I noticed from that story, I'll read it again. Officials may have caught the organizer of the attacks on closed-circuit TV. Now, it's easy for the government or a metro system or big businesses to pay for that sort of thing. But the good news is, so can you, and a pretty reasonable price, too. Let's talk about Simply Safe Home Security. Just a couple of years ago, if you wanted to protect your family, you had to spend a lot of money on a lot of complicated products. You'd be forced into a long-term contract, protecting your family with a tangled mess of wires and buttons and levers. It was just too much and very, very expensive. So thanks to Simply Safe, protecting your family is now simple. And they're blowing the roof off the home security industry.
Simply Safe takes all the elements of good home security and streamlines them into one amazing system. You can get 24/7 professional monitoring, powerful sensors, and now a high-definition security camera. And the camera, let me tell you, is brilliant. In the event of a break-in, it automatically starts recording. You'll get cold, hard evidence for the police sent right to your smartphone. Plus, you can live stream HD footage anytime you like.
Go to simplysafe.com/ricochet right now to get our special 10% discount. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com. Go now, simplysafe.com/ricochet. On to our crazy martini now, Jim. And for this to begin, we're going to have to get in the Wayback Machine. Way back, all the way to March 22nd, 2017, if you can remember that far back. We talked in our crazy martini about former UN Ambassador Susan Rice, later the president's national security advisor, writing this holier-than-thou op-ed, I believe, in the Washington Post, in which she talked about how Trump's allegations that the Obama administration had been wiretapping or surveilling was doing a tremendous amount of damage to building trust and relationships with others around the world, things that were vital for the sake of national security. Well, what a difference a couple of weeks makes. Here's Eli Lake over at Bloomberg. White House lawyers last month discovered that the former national security advisor Susan Rice requested the identities of U.S. persons in raw intelligence reports on dozens of occasions that connect to the Donald Trump transition and campaign, according to U.S. officials familiar with the matter. The pattern of Rice's request was discovered in a National Security Council review of the government's policy on unmasking the identities of individuals in the U.S. who are not targets of electronic eavesdropping, but whose communications are collected incidentally. Normally, those names are redacted from summaries of monitored conversations and appear in reports as something like U.S. Person 1. The National Security Council's Senior Director for Intelligence, Ezra Cohen Watnick, was conducting the review according to two U.S. officials who spoke with Bloomberg View on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss it publicly. In February, Cohen Watnick discovered Rice's multiple requests to unmask U.S. persons in intelligence reports that related to Trump transition activities. He brought this to the attention of the White House General Counsel's office, who reviewed more of Rice's requests and instructed him to end his own research into the unmasking policy. So, Jim, I know it shocks you, it shocks me, it shocks all of our listeners that Susan Rice would be somewhat deceptive here, misdirecting people in a way that takes
so
us away from the facts. But it turns out Susan Rice is not just tisking the Trump campaign, Trump administration. She was the one who was actually wanting to know exactly who was involved.
Some of these things happen in Washington. You don't really understand why they, you know, the motivation behind them seems vague. And then you get this piece of information where all of a sudden everything makes total sense. Well, so apparently, you know, Devin Nunes goes to the White House. This is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. And everybody is talking about it like he'd taken a severe blow to the head and was acting and behaving strangely. Well, because he had gone to the somewhere in the White House grounds, and you know, the White House is very vague about why he was there, how he had gotten there, who'd signed him in, all that kind of stuff. Well, according to this report from Eli Lake, He needed to go to the White House because the reports of regarding who was accessing these files is only on a database for the executive branch. In other words, he could not check this from Congress. I'm guessing he's probably not connected to the internet as a whole or something. So he needed to view the computer systems within the National Security Council that would include the logs of Rice's request to unmask U.S. persons. So first of all, now all of a sudden, if you're Devin Nunes, all of a sudden, oh, by the way, Susan Rice was looking into all the Trump campaign people and all the Trump transition people, and was seeking out the unmasking and things like that. All of a sudden, this looks a whole lot more sinister. All of a sudden, this looks a lot more troubling because look, one, it's not like we haven't seen Susan Rice involved in a massive cover up of if not illegal behavior, then certainly egregiously poor judgment regarding the Benghazi attack and things like that. And then this kind of this strange session. So how much was this? I'm here, obviously, as we're having this conversation, Greg, it is being furiously debated and picked apart on Twitter. And more than a few people whose judgment I trust are saying, look, this is you're not going to see Susan Rice looking at these transcripts and leaking something like Michael Flynn talked to the Russian ambassador about sanctions. He just doesn't. This just doesn't seem like something this high level. She's not likely to be the person calling the reporters. So now the question is, who was she in contact with who would contact reporters, call the likes of David Ignatius and say, hey, you want to hear what Michael Flynn was talking about with the Russian ambassador? So look, it appears there is a little bit of fire there. The smoke has finally accumulated. Like everyone else, I'd like to see this not come out on Twitter. I'd like to see this not come out with one anonymous source or something. I would like if the administration feels like they've genuinely been wronged here and that the previous administration either broke the law or acted extraordinarily unethically in uncovering information that was supposed to remain secret and used it for partisan purposes. Guys, put all this out there. It sounds like you got a heck of a story to tell, and it looks like you really can return and point the finger at legitimately the administration. But I don't like hearing this coming out in dribs and drabs and bits and pieces because I trust Eli Lake as a reporter. The thing is that now I'm relying entirely on U.S. officials familiar with the matter, and I'm hoping they're not just, voices in Eli Lake's head.
What was going on in Susan Rice's head where she puts out this school marm type rebuke of the Trump administration, knowing full well if these reports are true, that she's in the middle of all this?
In for a penny, in for a pound. Right? I mean, you're already doing something unethical, then you might as well really get into pointing the finger at the other guy.
Wow. Wow. Good start to the week. We could see some more smoke potentially before the week is out. Jim, good to be with you as always. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit our friends at Simply Safe Home Security. That's simplysafe.com/ricochet. Join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.